Welcome to On the Bright Side, a chance to go behind the scenes and learn all about what's happening on Bright Side with your host, Michael Ulrich.
On this episode, we're going to take a look at the initial product solutions that Bright Side's going to offer. They're focused on helping Albertans save, everything from digital spare change to challenging themselves to save where it matters most to them. We're also going to look at the Bright Side spend card from MasterCard that will be coming out just after the savings product. I'm joined today by two of our best and brightest Brightsiders, Mike Barnland and Andrew Wright. Mike heads up the product design and customer experience team at Brightside. He's been with ATB just over 3 years and was part of the original team of six ATBers that started working on the Challenger Bank project back in the fall of 2017. Andrew is the newly appointed lead around all things product design at Brightside. He's been working in the UX space for more than a decade and brings his unique set to ATB just over a year ago and joined Brightside earlier this year. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So we're going to dig in today and talk a lot about savings and why Brightside is going down that path with savings being the focus of the initial offering. And it turns out it's a large customer problem within groups of digital savvy Albertans. Mike, maybe to start, talk a little bit about how savings kind of bubbled to the surface for Brightside to really focus in on.
It never needed to bubble to the surface. Like, we immediately, when we started talking to customers, we knew there was problems around savings in our target market. There was no question. And we knew we were going to have to take those head on. It was just a matter of when. And I think through the course of this past year, through looking at the different solutions we wanted to offer, the various problems we saw in our market, savings was a great opportunity to basically get the product in customers' hands as quickly as possible. We've got a really strong research team here. They can work with panels and stuff that we pull. We can do guerrilla style research on the street, but there's no replacement for having a customer actually working with their real money in a product. So getting into market and getting real customer feedback was critical. And savings was one of our best opportunities to get a product in market that could stand on its own, that didn't have a whole lot of additional pieces that needed to be delivered as table stakes. Although when we talk about cards in a little bit, I'll talk about, like, that was one of the reasons we couldn't go with cards first, is because you need a lot of things to support the card experience. Where savings is something that can stand on its own, and savings was something that could integrate with people's existing financial lives with their current banks a lot easier. And we're not asking people to make that big switch. It's a very big mental barrier for people to switch banks.
You touched on the research that's been done. There's been a lot of it. There's kind of these buckets or segments of people that start to emerge and trying to design features that will kind of address problems that they're obviously experiencing in the real world. So a couple of the ones that have been interesting that have come to the surface is these people that they kind of realize they need to save, but they don't quite know what they're capable of. We have another segment who they may want to save, but they're really all about living in the moment. I think our nickname for them is these YOLers, or these you only live oncers. And then we've got people who want to save.
I won't call them that. Yeah.
That will never make it to the actual product design set. And then we have these other people who are interested in saving, but they don't know where to start. And so we've kind of come up with some interesting savings features. And maybe, Andrew, I'll let you touch on those and kind of how each of the features are really being brought to life to address some of those segments and the problems they're experiencing.
Yeah, we kind of are trying to think of it as a savings journey. And, you know, as you mentioned, some people don't really know how capable they are of saving or aren't really sure where to find the funds to put aside for something that they may want later, or so just an activity they want to do on the weekend. And so we're trying to stagger it and kind of build on ideas for people. One of the first ideas that we're introducing with our savings account is the idea of spend to save. So as you're spending, we'll take the difference of that spend and round it up. And then once a week, we take that change and we put it into a savings account of your choice. And you can have as many or as few savings accounts as you want. Kind of stepping away from the idea of goals and just giving you a space to collect your coins, just like the jar at home, right? I don't know if people still really have physical change, but we're going to take that same concept and apply it digitally. When people sort of go through that experience, what it's going to do is reveal to them how much they actually can save each week based on the transactions they conduct. And over a period of time, we can maybe even nudge them up and sort of acknowledge the saving that they're uncovering, and they may turn it into something else. And really, we want to make that as easy as possible for customers to have a easy mechanism that they can sort of set and forget and have money move from, say, some external financial institution initially into a Brightside account and be earning on that. But we noticed that there is one thing about this that, from the research that Mike was talking about and some of our early hypotheses, that not everyone's comfortable with that automatic savings coming out every single time, whether it's every 2 weeks or every month. We wanted to give people an opportunity to ask first. So we would actually prompt them beforehand and confirm that they want to make that movement. And so, you know, every second week on a Thursday, for example, you get paid and you have a scheduled movement for $100 and you've opted in to be asked first. we would ask them, you know, do you want to move this $100? Do you want to make it a little bit more? Do you want to dial it back and make it a little bit less? Or do you want to skip this one altogether and just wait till the next one? Giving them a little bit more control and freedom about how that money movement actually happens. There's one third thing that I think is actually really interesting and a bit of a differentiator for us, and that's challenges. This is kind of an idea where taking the idea of saving and flipping it on its head. Another way to save is to spend less. We want customers to challenge themselves to spend less at certain vendors or merchants or in categories, right? Our common example is coffee shops. Everyone seems, at least around me anyway, seems to spend too much money on coffee. And that would be a great place to challenge themselves to spend less. Perhaps restaurants, you eat out too often or more than you want to, and you want to try and cut back a little bit. There are lots of different categories that we can draw on just from customers' transactions to help them categorize their spend and identify where they can spend less. So our initial offering will give people 7-day challenges where they can pick a category, set an amount that they want to try and hit or spend less than. And when they do that, if they successfully complete the challenge and for 7 days spend less than their target, we'll take the difference and give them the option to move that straight into savings or keep it where it is so that they can just go ahead and spend it in some other way.
And I think one of the interesting pieces is on day one, when these kind of savings features are available, it's the initial kind of offering from Brightside. There's still a really interesting connection that's made to where people are doing their primary banking to bring this to life. Mike, do you want to maybe just unpack that for us?
A lot of folks at ATB are going to be familiar with linking accounts through TrackIt. So we're doing something pretty similar. And actually, some of the underlying technology is going to be the same. It's also provided by MX. As part of the onboarding experience, we want to take you directly into an option to be funding that savings account when you open it. And we want to have a really seamless way for you to be able to log into your existing bank and link that so that we can facilitate the money movement. Nobody likes doing EFT payments. I want to be clear, like we didn't want to use EFTs initially for it, but we think we can actually provide quite a good experience around it by providing this linked account. So people aren't going to have to go and fetch those three numbers themselves and put them in and just hope everything's working the way that people are currently using EFTs. They're just going to be signing into their other bank using the same login credentials they use all the time. Our system's going to say, here's the accounts that you have to choose from. And then we're going to create a link with that. That's going to provide a number of things. So one of them is facilitating the money movement between the accounts. So both into Brightside and out, because that's the other thing is we want people to put their savings into Brightside, but nobody's going to be comfortable if it feels like it's going to be a pain in the ass to get the money out of there. And then the other part of that is that we're also going to get access to the transactions that they have at their other financial institution, which is going to play heavily into the challenges that Andrew was just mentioning. And it's, we know from the testing that we've done with customers and the prototyping that having it personalized and knowing that it's tailored to my financial situation is key to making people trust the experience and really be engaged in it.
So Andrew touched on it really being about trying to create kind of a savings journey for Brightsiders. You've brought up experience a few times. Customer experience almost seems like a buzzword sometimes these days in how it's used. From your perspective, overseeing customer experience and design at Brightside, you know, how would you frame what customer experience is all about?
For Brightside, what it means embracing people where they are. You can't actually get, I think, to the best customer experience just by surveying and trying to measure it that way. It's by actually observing people. It's by validating that it's actually solving a real problem. It's by putting the right metrics in place and knowing that they're using it in the ways that you expected and that it's having a positive impact on their lives. Customer experience it's a huge tool for acquisition and retention. And it's one of our best opportunities for differentiation. It's just an area that we think that the vast majority of our competitors are not doing a good job. And it's an area that we think that we're particularly strong. We're going forward with that as one of our core differentiators. We've got a lot of early positive indicators with the testing that we've done in prototypes that we're landing it, even internally at ATB, showing off the designs and the workflows and the products. We've been receiving a ton of positive feedback on it. It's super critical that we're able to really nail it. And it's going to be an area we continue to invest in. That's a big part of Andrew's new role, is really realizing customer experience as a competitive differentiator for Brightside.
Andrew, you've spent some time in prototyping this savings journey, sitting with actual customers, walking them through the experience, letting them explore it and kind of react to it. What's been some of the insights or some of the interesting things that have come out of just really having real world feedback as you've built the actual product feature set?
We wanted to introduce goals. In fact, we tried twice to introduce goals into customers' worlds because we believe that that was a thing that they wanted in a way of sort of structuring their savings and giving it a target and sort of framing it in a way that was meaningful to them. You know, there's very low demand for structured savings goals with the people that we've worked with and prototyped with and demonstrated this with. It taught us a little bit of something about how they're internalizing this idea of saving. What we learned was that they have a purpose for their money. They've internalized a purpose and an intent or an intention for what they're going to spend it on, but they have very little interest in saying, I'm trying to save a specific amount of money at or for a specific time. It gives them a commitment that they weren't really keen on. And so the cool thing was that we're actually structuring the product in a way that allows them to demonstrate that intent with naming their accounts and giving a little bit of personalization and customization, but not having to have that sort of burden of commitment. I think that was a really insightful moment for us that we got to kill the idea of goals. We sort of let it go, but we gave other ways and other entry points in for customer to demonstrate their own intent and purpose for their money.
Savings is hard for people. There's an intentionality here with what Brightside is doing around savings to almost pull that line of sight forward.
Yeah, we made many jokes about how the destination of everybody's financial journey ends with a couple silver-haired sailing off into the sunset on a boat. We joke about it, but it's actually shocking how true that is in the market messaging you see for most of the big banks. Our target market is just not that interested in living to this scripted social context that most banks would like you to live in. We have a much more targeted offering. We're going towards a very specific set of people with some unsolved problems that the big banks just aren't paying that much attention to yet. Our target market is not going to live this step by step. They're not going to necessarily go to university right away, and then they're not going to necessarily buy a house and start filling it with kids and then planning for retirement. They may do these things out of order. They may want to take a year off somewhere. They may not want to have kids. I think a big piece of when we look at how people have struggled to save, there's a number of irrationalities that come into play whenever anybody in our target market is trying to make money decisions. And one of the strong irrationalities we saw is what people consider to be money that's available to them. And a lot of the time what they'll look is they'll look at like a combination of what is available in their credit card plus what's their current balance in their checking account and gut feel, how does that feel to determine whether or not I should make this purchase. It's a very unscientific way, but it's shocking how many very smart people make their money decisions that way. When we look at people like that, they'll tell us that they can't save. It's not that they can't save. It's just the way that they make money decisions now means that they have to prioritize saving over something else that they'd otherwise want to purchase. There's other ways you can get around that, though. Like one of the strategies we try to take with the scheduled savings and trying to time it in some way to payroll is getting that money out of their cash flow. Most people in our target market are very cash flow based. But the thing is, if you take a little bit of money out of it before that cash flow goes down to zero, all of their decision making from that point forward is adjusted based on that new balance. They actually can save. It's just that they have to get that money out of their cash flow earlier. But we're basically trying to assist them until they can build up that confidence and say, yes, I can do this. And so part of what Andrew's got planned is like there's actually stages at which we say, hey, it looks like you've been able to consistently save this much by saving spending on coffee, let's say. How would you just start making that a recurring transfer? It just happens automatically. So rather than go straight to that passive saving, we try to build some loyalty with the customer by building up their confidence with the process of saving and then providing them that means for them to say, let's just switch that on and have that happen automatically.
Yeah, I think that's been a really underlying theme is this idea of really trying to empower people to understand what they're capable of versus trying to tell them something that they don't currently feel like is possible for them. What are you most excited, interested, terrified to learn from real ATBers and then Albertans to follow about how kind of the savings journey holds up?
I'm really keen to see how people participate in the challenges because a lot of this is about how people perceive their own behaviors, how they perceive their own models around spending or saving. And I mean, Mike just touched on a whole bunch of that that makes so much sense. And I think the challenges are a really interesting way for people to kind of engage with themselves. It's not competitive against anyone else. They're not being compared against anyone else or judged or anything else. They just get to see how they can change their behavior to give themselves some sort of reward. I'm excited and scared about it all. So I'm mostly excited to get the feedback, the first bit of feedback, whether it's amazing or, you know, a little less than amazing. Either way, I think it'll be really great to hear.
We'll have a cam ready to go the day that we release it, just on Andrew to see just how people react and what his face does.
Current status. Yeah. If I could just pile on with that too, I think what I'd say about bringing on the ATB waitlist, the thing that most excites me about it and the thing that most terrifies me about it is actually the same thing. And that's that ATB is going to be our harshest critic, I think, which I think is actually a really good thing. Totally. I believe that ATB is going to give us very honest feedback and they're not going to let us slide anywhere. You guys have done a great job building up that wait list. And I know we've got I think over 1,500 people, I think, on the wait list now, don't we?
Yeah, closing in on 1,500.
I know we're going to take it on the chin on some things because we haven't had this in production before. All bets are off once you get it in people's hands and there's no eyes behind them watching them, what they're going to do. So
we've talked a lot about savings. That'll be what initially kind of the first offering from Brightside is tied to. But there's lots more on the roadmap. And there's some things that are set up right now as fast follows. And one of them is really an intentional value proposition around spending, and kind of the anchor piece of that is the Brightside Spend Card. So maybe let's kind of switch gears and focus in on the Brightside Spend Card a little bit, because it is unique. It's a bit of a new product from MasterCard in Canada. If you can set up a little bit about kind of how the card is set up and what's really going to be unique about the way that we can bring that card to Brightsiders a little bit further down the roadmap.
We are going to be the first bank in Canada to launch this. It's called MasterCard's Flex product, which is basically positioned to be the best of both worlds between debit and credit. We want this to be the first thing people grab when they're doing their day-to-day spending. I mean, it's hard to do that. You're competing against everybody. We believe that there's a target market here that is going to be quite sizable that isn't comfortable going into debt. And a lot of what we're going to be doing, especially the term loan offering, is going to be coming as a fast follow as well. And a lot of the positioning around term loans is going to be positioning it as an alternative to credit card debt, just like the card will be. Because the card basically functions like a prepaid card that's backed by a spending account, or what we talk about in ATB is a checking account. We're calling it a spending account just because the majority of our customer base don't use checks all that often, so we're just calling it a spending account. But yeah, it's a prepaid card that's automatically reloaded in real time by the backing account. So to the customer, they don't have to worry about manually reloading the card. They just use it as they would use any other card. But you get a lot of the benefits of being a MasterCard prepaid card, but without the pain in the ass of loading it. So what that means is that I can use a card that's backed by money I already have to make online purchases. There's loads of people today, in fact, the majority of people today, every single purchase they make online, which is quite sizable, is done with credit. They're putting themselves further in debt. And worse, not just any credit. It's a credit that's normally at like 19, 20% interest. It's insanity, but people continue to do it. But we believe that there's a lot of people that are actually pretty debt averse, especially in our target markets, that are going to appreciate being able to do that with another card. And this is one of the big reasons why ATB has been receiving constant requests for prepay and debit cards from Visa and MasterCard so that they can do stuff like that. So our spend card, you're going to be able to buy things online. You're going to be able to use it at any Cirrus network anywhere. So you can use it to take out money at any ATM. We have a provider that's going to give us a lot of cool functionality. Like we can perform business logic in real time at a transaction. Now what that means is that when somebody goes to buy something at a coffee shop and taps that card, we could potentially take the challenges in a way in the future where we could, if a customer has said, I only want to spend $50 a week on coffee, we could actually have the card enforce it. And if they go to spend more than $50 a week at coffee, it would actually decline them at that point if they'd chosen to do that. But at the same time, it allows us to remove some of the really negative decline experiences. So we could say the customer could configure it in such a way where if they go to spend some money on a card and they actually can't fund the transaction, we might be able to activate like an overdraft to give them the amount to cover that transaction, then send them a notification right away. And this is all happening in real time at the transaction point of sale, saying, okay, we got that last transaction. You probably don't want to buy your friends that next round because it's probably going to get declined. Because really, like, there's certain experiences like that are the worst around cards. And they seem like infrequent enough to not worry too much about. But when we actually ask customers, like, what's the worst experience you have with your bank? Usually it has to do with surprise decline or waiting for a card or something else like this that probably doesn't seem like that big of a deal because it doesn't happen that frequently. But it is a big deal. It is a big deal because a customer perceives it as a big deal. So all these capabilities allow us to really mitigate some of the negative experiences you have around declines, around like trying to control your spend. There's a whole bunch of different things you get with it. The card opens up a lot of different options in terms of like we can do insurances and price protections and things like that. So we're currently investigating and getting some quotes on what it would cost to say if you bought a phone with your Brightside card and then 2 months later you smashed it. We can just provide insurance for it. And if you're a Brightsider, you don't have to worry about dropping your phone anymore. Like there's a lot of things like that. There'd be some pretty powerful messaging around it. That's not going to be a really high cost to us because like these products are available and can be packaged with MasterCards really easily. So there's a whole bunch of things we can pile onto this. It's going to be really exciting. We got a multi-currency bin on the card as well. One of the things we tested early was the ability for somebody to carry multiple currencies on one card, and it did really, really well. Even though a lot of our target market isn't heavy travelers, we believe it is as much of an aspirational job as it is a practical one. And we really like what Canada Post has done with Cash Passport, where you can actually set up different wallets of currency in your card. And depending on the point of sale terminal you use, it'll draw from the appropriate local currency. That way you can set up like a travel budget. I could put 500 US on my card. And as soon as I hit that limit, that card will stop working. So those are the kind of things we are going to have the ability to do with the card over the long term. So we're definitely trying to look far into the future with the card and making sure we're set up for all those kind of opportunities in the future.
The other thing, obviously, because it is treated almost like a debit style purchase, a lot of people that use primarily debit today don't really have access to a great rewards platform. It's a bit of a limited opportunity on debit spend. So the nature of this product being kind of on the credit rails is there's an income stream for us to generate, which we'll dig into maybe when we do one of these podcasts around the kind of the pricing and the economics of Brightside. But the benefit of transacting on those credit rails is because we're able to kind of make a little bit off the transaction, we can actually offer people a pretty significant kind of rewards ecosystem around using this card, which they wouldn't if they're just a straight debit user today.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that question, because that's one of the best things about this card is that we won't go deep on it. But yeah, we get the deposit income as well as the interchange income on the spend, which is huge. And it allows for us to do things like we can have the most compelling debit rewards offering in Canada, because we're going to have a healthy enough interchange on the spend that we can scale that rewards program without having to put caps on it. Most of the debit rewards programs in Canada today have very, very low ceilings. I think the example I always use is Scotiabank has one where you can earn a maximum of $300 rewards in the year, and your yearly fee for that card is $150. So the first $150 and that you get is just your fee back. You know, those are the kind of things where it's almost just a market message more than it is a real rewards program, where I think we can do a real rewards program. We can have like an actually meaningful return without having people incur any debt whatsoever on the spend. And so we're pretty excited about that.
So we've talked a lot about the savings product features. We've talked now about the spending. There's lots more on the roadmap, and we're not going to go too deep into them today, but maybe from each of you, there's other things, little features, larger features that are kind of queued up to come, and still some of the scheduling of when they'll be available is really being worked through. But maybe what's one or two of the additional kind of value props or features you guys are most excited to kind of get moving forward once we're really kind of through this initial savings push?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the next big things for me that's really exciting is the term loans. And term loans don't seem that exciting. But I think what excited me about it is when we have these concept squads in our delivery process that get together to do things like size the market and explain the opportunity and that sort of thing is when we try to decide what's going to be going on the roadmap. And there's just such a massive opportunity there. Like, I had no idea until that process just the tremendous amount of credit card debt that Albertans carry. Our target market alone, and our target market is 44% of Alberta, it's not all of Alberta, 44% of Alberta carries annually a $2.9 billion worth of credit card debt. And when you consider like the debt problems and cash flow problems that our target market has, that's easily one of the biggest problems that we can help solve for our customers. And the term loan offering is really interesting because it's profitable for Brightside, but it's also going to be a huge help for people. If we can get people past the hump of feeling like term loans debt, but credit card isn't, that's our big challenge. And I think we can meet that challenge. I think we can get around that with really good marketing in particular. I'm just looking for Mike to see what he says. I think like the positioning around the term loan is actually one of the biggest drivers of that product success. And I believe we can do that. And I think that if we can convert even close to what ATB's been able to convert in terms of the conversion to the balance transfer promotion that they had a while back, if we can hit close to those kind of numbers on term loan acquisition, we're going to be in a really good spot. And we think that that's going to do a lot of good for Brightsiders because we hope that we can open their eyes to how they can use debt to sort of refinance some of the bad debt and to get themselves out of debt problems in the long term and how to use it to their advantage. And we think that's one of the biggest things that we can do for Brightsiders.
Andrew, what about for you?
For me, I think the one that I'm really keen on right now is the idea, and we started to talk about this already, but is around rewards and the idea of also coupling that with exposing Brightsiders to a possible marketplace where they can get access to other services that aren't just bank-oriented services, like perhaps You know, extended public Wi-Fi or front of line services or pass hopping or pass line jumping, queue jumping. I don't know. I'm sure there's a right term out there that makes the most sense. But, you know, possibly exposing other services to our customers that aren't just solely focused on the banking experience and help them live a better life or get access to things that they would otherwise have more difficulty getting access to. And I think that's a really interesting sort of play on, you know, being able to be a Brightsider, finding control, but also finding access that supports you living your best life now and in the short term, and not necessarily, you know, thinking about the silver hair and sailboat scenario that we touched on already. So I'm really keen to see how that plays out and when we get to the rewards component of it, so that we can actually demonstrate the value that we can provide, as Mike mentioned, you know, being a leader in Canada around rewards on debit, as well as, you know, just allowing customers to have that positive feedback that they're doing behaviors that are great for them and spending money in the way they want to, and also seeing some return from us and our acknowledgement of that and their contribution to our practice.
That, I think that's a really good point, and that I think that's what makes me really excited about both of these, is that these are great examples of ways where I believe we're going to succeed in marrying Brightside success with Brightsider success. Totally. Where the rewards, where we're collecting the interchange on the spend, so that's helpful for us, but we're giving some of that back to the customer. And we really believe that the long-term success is going to come from having success when our customer has success.
Clearly, the goal is set out. It's to build a world-class digital banking app with some pretty unique products and solutions, and it's going to be focused on savings to start. And very clearly, we're excited to get this in the hands of ATBers and really let them provide their feedback. The other thing we want to talk about on an upcoming episode is all about supporting Brightsiders. With this being a digital banking app, obviously, we really want to have a world-class digital customer support. So on the next episode, we're going to look at what does exceptional customer-obsessed support actually look like in a digital environment. We hope you know a little bit more about Brightside, and better yet, have a question or two that you'd like to get answered. You can send your questions to brightside@atb.com, and we'll be sure to answer them on upcoming episodes of On the Brightside. I want to thank our guests, Mike Barnland and Andrew Wright, who are both leading the way at Brightside when it comes to customer experience and product design, right alongside an incredible group of product owners, developers, and technology specialists. If you ever want to see us hard at work here at Brightside, we would love to have you stop by for a visit. Just let us know when you'd like to come hang out by using the Work from Brightside form that's available on our Google site. And speaking of our Brightside Google site, we would love for you to check it out. You'll find a link to it from any of our Brightside articles that are posted on Inside ATB. And on that site, there's lots more information about what's happening at Brightside and what's ahead. Plus, you want to be sure to join the So Great It's Worth the Wait list if you haven't already, so you're first in line to try out the Brightside app when it's available in early 2019. Until the next On the Brightside, stay bright.
For more information on this podcast, please contact Michael Ulrich. His email address is mulrich@atb.com. You can also visit the Brightside G+ community. Use the words Brightside in your search.